Rusty Quill presents The Magnus Archives. Episode 69, Thought for the Day.
Here you go. Sasha in today.
Oh, she's got the day off. Said she was spending the day with this Tom of hers.
Oh, anything nice?
Didn't say.
Have you ever actually met him?
Why would I have? We don't exactly hold socials. He sounds nice enough, I suppose, in a Kensington sort of way. You ever met him?
No, but she's pretty private with that stuff, isn't she? Not like Tim. Just talk to him, please.
I think we've said more than enough. I doubt there's much more words can do for us.
You can't work together like this.
Ironically, I think working is all Tim and I can do together.
Look, John, like, when was the last time we all just talked? Just talked without all
of this... Thank you for the tea, Martin.
Okay, fine. He's not wrong, you know.
I know. Statement of Darren Harlow. Statement of Darren Harlow regarding a failed psychology experiment at the University of Surrey. Original statement given 18th November 2010. Audio recording by Jonathan Sims, head archivist of the Magnus Institute, London. Statement begins. Things always seem so obvious in retrospect. That experiment was always a terrible idea. Even at the time, I remember thinking it sounded like something out of a horror movie. I mean, every time I heard a new detail about it, I'd go home and tell my wife, and we'd speculate over dinner about how it was going to go wrong in some grotesque and horrific way. We'd laugh and suggest the ways it could turn those poor grad students into crazed killers or mutated monsters. And when I started to see more and more spiders around the lab, I turned the very real sense of unease into the fun sort of fear. Like I was just playing at being scared. It's so strange. Even when you're really looking for horror, it's impossible to actually believe it. It always feels like something you made up, just having a bit of fun, scaring yourself. Because those things don't happen. Not in the real world. But you think sometimes about what the real world is. Just what your brain mixes together from what your senses tell you. We create the world in a lot of ways. I suppose it shouldn't be surprising that when we're not being careful, we can change it. Before you ask any in-depth questions about the methodologies or structure of the experiment, I should make it clear I'm just one of the cleaners. I have no idea how or why they started it, or God knows where the funding came from. I find it hard to believe the psych department okayed it, but I'm not an academic and those decisions are way over my head. I mainly take care of the science labs. Most of the cleaning crews at the university get shifted around a lot, working in different buildings or departments one month to the next. But there's a lot of stuff in the labs that requires additional training to clean safely, so we're a bit more specialised than the rest. I mean, they still don't let us within spitting distance of the really expensive equipment. That was all taken care of by the lab techs. But the point is, I'm a much more familiar face around the science departments than a cleaner would otherwise be. There's also the fact that the science lot actually talked to me on occasion. I don't want to say it's because I'm white and the rest of the cleaning crew isn't, but they always talked to me in a way they didn't talk to the others. So I became the de facto point of contact between the cleaners and the rest of the staff. Long story short, I generally knew roughly what the deal was with most of the experiments being run at any point. So when Dr. Elizabeth Bates told me about the latest study by her psychology postgrads, I thought she was pulling my leg. The psych department is generally one of the least demanding from my perspective, as it's almost entirely people sitting at computers or in interview rooms. Once or twice, I think they were given use of an MRI machine at some hospital or other, but that's more a neuroscience thing, and more importantly, didn't happen in the buildings I cleaned. Since I've been there, which is a good 7 years now, they've never crossed over into parapsychology, nothing even remotely less than respectable research. So when Liz explained the experiment and I realised they were basically doing ESP research, I got a bit excited. I mean, she dressed it up with all sorts of science jargon and sent my head spinning plenty, but it still basically boiled down to seeing if the thoughts and feelings of a group of people in one room had any effect on the experience of a subject in a separate, sealed room. I mean, she could talk about group dynamics and call it proximity intuition or whatever it was she said, but I know ESP research when I'm mopping its floors. Not that I mind it, of course, I love that crap. I'm a horror nut, but I generally tend towards the more sci-fi end. Demons and ghosts have never really got me, but give me aliens or the sinister powers of the human mind and I am there. I didn't tell any of this to Liz, of course. I got the impression that it was a bit of a sore spot, and I've no reason to piss off the people I work with. But you can be damn sure I was keeping a much closer eye on this experiment than I was the others, especially when she told me a bit more about how they were doing it. The basic premise was pretty similar to most of these studies. There was a room with a one-way mirror where the subject would sit, and they'd be strapped up to measure physical responses. The other side of the glass was anywhere between 1 and 20 participants who would be receiving stimulus for a certain response or feeling. Those feelings would be incited while their attention was on the subject through the mirror. Then they simply measured what, if any, response the subject had to something they couldn't see, hear, or otherwise be aware of. Sometimes the subject was told there were people on the other side of the glass when there weren't, in order to get a control group and weed out any placebo responses. The subject's name was Annabelle Kane. What really got me, though, was what Liz told me about the specific nature of the feelings they were trying to project. They were planning to work with fear. Specifically, they had selected as projectors a group of people who self-identified as arachnophobes, and at certain points of their watching Annabelle, videos of spiders crawling, eating, and spawning would be randomly projected over the glass, inciting an acute fear response. The reasoning was that fear was both an extremely powerful emotion and one that would be very easy to distinguish in Annabelle's responses. They wanted to see if they could use ESP to scare her. I told you, it sounded like a setup to a horror movie, right? I don't know how they didn't see that. I mean, maybe they did. Maybe they went ahead with it for the same reason I joked with Laura about it instead of requesting a transfer. You come to relish the ghoulishness of it, because deep down, you know it's safe. The worst that might happen would be a few upset students. It should have just been an idle flight of fancy. Now, I can't really speak to what happened for the majority of the study. For obvious reasons, I wasn't cleaning the rooms in question while they were doing the tests. But I heard a few bits and pieces about it from Liz and some of the other researchers. It seemed to be going well to begin with. Annabelle was displaying some subtle but statistically significant signs of distress and unease while the spiders were being shown, signs that were noticeably absent during the control periods. I know that the fear reactions were certainly serious enough for the poor souls that had unwittingly signed up as projectors. I had to clean up when one of them was sick during the first round of testing. He had to leave the experiment, if I remember. Lucky sod. I'm sure you can guess what I ended up cleaning more and more of over the course of the study. Cobwebs. I mean, you can't avoid them in buildings with high ceilings and inviting corners, but even so, there were more and more of them each day. I'd brush or hoover them away in an evening, only to find them returned the next morning, thicker than ever. I never got a good look at the spiders behind them. Unlike most of the ones I've seen sitting fat and proud in the center of their webs, the most I ever saw of these would be a quick scuttle of dark legs disappearing into a hole in the plaster or behind a wall installation. It creeped me out plenty, but in a good way, I thought. I knew that, logically, they were just escaping the winter. I mean, you know how cold it's been these last few weeks. I tried to spook Liz, telling her how her dark experiments were summoning up an army of spiders. I had no idea. The tests were progressing, and they had started introducing multiple projectors at once to see how it affected the intensity of the feelings Annabelle was receiving. Liz was very excited by the results. I can still remember her face as she told me that Annabelle had apparently reported having several unsettling dreams about spiders. Notably, at no point in the experiment had she been informed that it was spiders being used. Liz was excited, telling me how the dreams seemed to map very well to the physiological responses they had been recording. How Annabelle had dreamed of tiny legs running along her veins like a web. It was then they started to have problems, though. While adding additional projectors had at first increased the severity of the responses, it seemed this had very quickly tapered off, and soon the measurements had changed significantly. They were still getting noticeable responses, but they weren't like the ones they'd gotten before. They didn't appear to be fear. Liz was irritated by this, as even though the results still looked good for a general ESP study, the variation in response tone would apparently muddy the research in ways she wasn't keen on. I only saw Annabelle Kane once during this period. She wasn't hard to pick out. She dressed like a vintage clothing store exploded on her, and her short bleach blonde hair stood out sharply against dark skin. The first time I saw her, I liked her. She looked like the kind of student who occasionally talked to cleaners like they were people. Not that we ever actually spoke, but she had that air about her. This time, though, it was just as she was leaving the mirror room. She was walking strangely, like her trousers didn't fit her right. She kept bending her knees at kind of odd angles, holding herself with this stiffness. Her arm was extended, and she ran her hand along the wall as she went, moving her fingers rapidly so it scuttled like, well, like a spider with its legs missing. Even then, I didn't really start to consider what might be happening. No, I didn't take it seriously until what happened last Thursday. I'd pulled a late shift and just finished my first sweep of the labs. I'd made a start on mopping the corridors leading up to the rooms Liz had been using when I noticed the lights were still on. Now, she'd mentioned that afternoon they were trying the first sessions with all 19 of the remaining projectors. They'd had a predictably high dropout rate. Now, I know that the more people you have involved in a test, the longer it tends to take and the more potential there is for delays, so it might well have overrun, but it was 9:30 in the evening by that point, so it seemed very unlikely it would have gone on that long. I thought maybe they'd just left the lights on by accident. These things happen. I did my best to forget that the lights in those rooms were normally motion-activated. I hope someday I'll forget what I saw when I opened that door, but I won't. All the arachnophobes.